New findings are out on the progress of the Missoula PD in response to sexual assault. Good evening, I'm Corin Cates Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. We also have an interview with Barry Beach, who's been denied clemency a fourth time by the Montana Parole Board.
And how crews are dealing with an 80-foot-tall snow pile on the Going to the Sun Road. Police in Missoula continue their improve their investigation of sexual assault reports and are demonstrating better communication with victims and the community's sexual assault resources, according to a recent review. The evaluation is required under the department's May 2013 agreement with the Department of Justice to improve policies in the training and handling of sexual assault and rape cases. An external review panel looked at 41 felony sexual assault cases between September and March and only found significant concern with one investigation of one case. Independent reviewer Thomas R. Tremblay says while there is room for improvement in officers' initial responses, he is noticing improved documentation and tracking of evidence. The department is seeing increased reports of sexual assault, which Tremblay says could be due, in part, to increased community awareness and public confidence in the reporting process. The next evaluation will be released in September.
In news from around the state, as we reported earlier this week, Montana's parole board rejected a clemency application from Barry Beach. That means he'll continue to serve a 100-year sentence for the 1979 killing of high school classmate Kim Neese on the Fort Peck Indian Reservation. That decision marks the fourth time the Montana Board of Pardons and Parole declined to hold a full clemency hearing for Beach. Beach maintains Louisiana police coerced his confession. He has a long list of supporters and detractors. Those who support him include current Governor Steve Bullock, former Governor Brian Schweitzer, U.S. Senator John Tester, and former Senator Conrad Burns. Montana Attorney General Tim Fox supports this week's Board of Pardons ruling and points out many others in the law enforcement community do as well, including former Montana Attorney General Mark Roscoe. Beach today agreed to discuss this week's decision with Edward O'Brien. He says the parole board's ruling was disappointing and made him sick to his stomach. He adds he had a feeling prior to the announcement that it wasn't going to go well.
Well, for one thing, they continue to come up with different time delays and different reasons that this was being drug out. This initial stage of whether to accept or deny the application was supposed to be based on all seven parole board members being present. And when we got to the April 29th hearing, it was a three-member panel. And then there were several comments made at the three-member panel on April 29th that led us to believe that the parole board maybe probably wasn't going to go in our favor.
You also mentioned the potential impact of this decision on the entire state of Montana. That impact would be what?
Once again, it shows that our parole board in the state of Montana has too much power. I submitted a petition with 16,000 signatures on it. There were over 350 handwritten letters by different citizens from the state of Montana and across the United States of America. And the letters of the seven prominent political figures that supported me being released on parole. And for the parole board to fly in the face of that, including Governor Bullock's letter that was released just before the April 29th hearing, everything the parole board came out with in the end is a complete contrast and contradiction to everything this amount of support desired.
This has been talked about a lot, but maybe for those who aren't familiar, you did not approach your latest application with claims of innocence this time. Instead, you said your general circumstances had changed. Mr. Beach, what does that mean?
You know, what we had to do is we had to show that since my denial in 2007, there had been a substantial change in my circumstances. So first and foremost, every single witness that we presented to Judge Phillips in Lewistown had come forward and given affidavits after seeing the 2008 Dateline NBC program. Some of those statements weren't even signed off on until the year 2010, including our eyewitness, Steffi Eagleboy, who we presented to Judge Phillips. And it was mainly based on her eyewitness testimony in 1979 that compelled Judge Phillips to grant me a new trial. Then he released me, and I went out into society for 18 months. And while in society, I was very active with the Special Olympics organization. I was active in speaking with churches and high schools and elementary schools and other speaking engagements, you know, sharing my story and my life. as well as just community events that I was active in. And the parole board has now said that their exact words is that does not demonstrate exemplary behavior or a change in circumstances. How do you not weigh into the fact that I was released and I was out there for 18 months? How do you not consider that to be a change in circumstances since 2007 denial? And there again, that impacts the entire state of Montana. Because what's the purpose of incarceration and what's the purpose of the groups and programming here at the Montana State Prison if it's not to try and train a person to go out into society and become a productive part of society if you're not going to consider that to be rehabilitation?
I think your critics would answer by saying previous Montana attorneys general, including Tim Fox, the Montana Supreme Court, four separate decisions from the Board of Pardons and Parole, have all said nothing changes the fact that you've been convicted of murder, that you don't deserve a second chance. To them, you say what?
You know, that's easy to sit back and say because they don't want to reinvestigate the actual facts that they keep ignoring. Those exact same attorney generals also say that a bloody paw print left in the victim's blood has no probative value. They also say that the seven footprints where they drug the body down to the river and two of those footprints is where they jumped down on mud in the riverbank next to where they rolled the body. You could see where they rolled the body into the river, and those footprints are not mine, and yet the attorney generals that you speak of and Mark Roscoe have always said that those footprints have no value to this crime and that they can't even assure that they're connected to this crime. There's also a bloody towel that we've now done DNA on that had the victim's hair on it, but somebody else's blood. That blood has been DNA'd. That DNA is not mine and it is not the victim's, and yet the Attorney General's office and the Supreme Court and other people that have opposed me say that this DNA means nothing because they're not sure that this towel is connected to the crime, even though it had the victim's hair on it. Not only that, but the state of Montana Crime Lab and the Attorney General's office has lost 128 forensic slides of DNA evidence that could now be tested using different standards that even in 1979, none of them slides connected me to this crime. But still, we could have went back now, but they're the ones who lost these slides. So how do you continue to just cast aside and ignore all this forensic evidence when forensics is the very foundation and basis that our judicial system is based on?
Back to your basis for this most recent application that you've changed. There are lots of people in prison who've been convicted of murder when they were younger, and they've grown up and have changed or claim to have changed over the years. So should all of them be freed as well?
Well, actually, if you go back and you look at the Board of Pardons and the Department of Corrections website, you will see that there are a lot of those that are free. I know 20 or 25 of them who actually came into prison after I came into prison, and they're already out there on parole because they had the parole option in front of them, and they're out there.
What do you have to say to your supporters, including Governor Bullock?
You know, I appreciate their support because they don't know how much it means to me to know that they're out there fighting for me. And like they continue to tell me, we will not quit. I'm saddened by the fact that in the state of Montana, the way the law and the parole board operate, that even the governor of our state doesn't have any power or authority over this independent board that has quasi-judicial status.
Last question, and that would be, now what?
I have several options to take this back into court, which we will be doing something in the very near future. My legal team and I, we have options to take this both into state court and into federal court. You know, one thing that everybody has to remember is I was granted a new trial. I was released pending that new trial. And that new trial was granted based on eyewitness testimony that contradicts my conviction, contradicts my confession. The eyewitness states that they heard and saw numerous people commit this attack, and that they did not hear any male voices amongst that crowd. It wasn't a single attacker. This eyewitness testified that there were several people who committed this attack.
In December of 2011, you were released and were out for 18 months. Boy, it must have been doubly tough to have to go back from then. What is life like right now there?
You know, I can't even tell you how the struggle and battle against depression and gut, just gut, gut-wrenching sickness has been like over the past year, because it wasn't just a day or two. I mean, it's continued over this entire past year. To have gone out there and been reminded of what I'm fighting for, and to be reminded of the freedoms of life, and to feel that, and then to have it taken away by what I consider to be an erroneous decision by our Montana Supreme Court. It was more of a political decision than a judicial decision. If you study out the facts of this case and the facts of that decision, there's a true double standard being applied by the Montana Supreme Court in this case. It's just sickening, you know, to see and feel that. It's truly sad that there's not a single authority in the state of Montana that has a say-so or has oversight over the parole board, and especially when they make the statement that they make about rehabilitation in this situation. I have 64 certificates of accomplishment. I've taken every single group in every single prison that I have ever been in successfully. And yet the parole board says that there's no aspect of rehabilitation or change in my life. That's something that needs to be looked at differently in our state.
Members of the Montana Board of Pardons and Parole did not make themselves available for comment this week.
Snowplow crews at Glacier National Park are grappling with the so-called Big Drift blocking the Logan Pass on the Going to the Sun Road. At over 6,500 feet, Logan Pass is the highest point visitors can drive vehicles on the Going to the Sun Road. Snowplows often reach more than 100 feet deep, hence the Big Drift nickname. Jennifer Lutman, a Great Glacier National Park spokeswoman, says that although there's no specific tool for measuring the drift, road supervisors estimate the Big Drift to be about 80 feet deep this year. Lutman says the massive snow drift on Logan Pass is the final obstacle to opening the road for the tourist season.
There's two crews. There's an east side crew and a west side crew, and they both start at the west and east ends of the road and work to meet in the middle at Logan Pass. Several people on each crew also includes avalanche technicians that go up with the plowing crews to determine where the avalanche chutes are and if there is avalanche danger. So it's very complicated, but a lot of the people on the crews have been doing it for years and have a lot of knowledge and experience about the area and the equipment used.
Some of the equipment includes bulldozers, excavators, and front-end loaders. Crews use these heavy machines to remove tons of snow each year, but Lutman says snow removal is only the first step.
You know, we have a lot of debris that comes down on the road. We're getting some weather in the park right now, so we'll see if that rain and whatnot will bring anything down. Also, there's over 400 guardrails that need to be put up each year, and they're taken down in the fall so they don't get hurt or ruined in the winter season. So there's a lot of different moving parts.
Lutman says Logan Pass could open as early as June 21st, but stresses that's a rough estimate at this point. Debris removal and weather conditions make predictions difficult, but she said park officials hope to have a more precise estimate by Monday.
In tonight's forecast, west of the Divide should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain showers and lows in the mid-30s to lower 40s. Saturday will again be mostly cloudy with more rain likely and highs in the mid-50s to lower 60s. Sunday should see more clouds with a slight chance of rain showers in the morning, then a chance of rain showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon and evening, with highs in the mid-60s to lower 70s. In central Montana tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies along with scattered rain showers and isolated thunderstorms in the evening and isolated rain showers after midnight with lows from 40 to 45. Gusts of up to 35 miles per hour are likely in the evening. On Saturday, it should again be cloudy with more rain showers and highs from 55 to 60. On Sunday, again, more clouds and a chance of rain showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms, high 60 to 70. In southwest Montana tonight, look for mostly cloudy skies with isolated thunderstorms in the evening and scattered rain showers throughout the night, lows 35 to 40. On Saturday, more clouds again with rain and snow showers likely and highs from 55 to 60. On Sunday, you can expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and highs from 55 to 65. And now for the editorial comments of Dr. Bob Merchant.
Montana is famous for its big blue sky, but lately wildfires have taken a toll on our state's reputation. It turns out that our sky isn't always as clear and clean as we'd like it to be. I recently teamed up with Dr. Steve Running, an ecologist and climatologist at the University of Montana, because I wanted to piece together how warming temperatures from climate change are contributing to pulmonary stress that I'm seeing in the Montana hospitals. This year, four Montana counties earned an F on the American Lung Association's annual State of the Air report. This study looks at an average unhealthy days for particulate and ozone pollution in counties across the nation. A span of 3 years is reviewed when tabulating the results. This year, that span was 2010 to 2012, which included some smoky Montana summers, particularly 2012. Counties receiving an F included Missoula, Ravalli, Lewis and Clark, and Silver Bow counties. These unhealthy air days truly are unhealthy, not just annoying. The increased small particulate pollution created by wildfires is a hazard to everyone's lungs. And for those with asthma, COPD, heart disease, and other serious health conditions, this pollution can be life-threatening. When the air is smoky, our hospitals see more children with asthma attacks, more seniors with respiratory disease, and more people with heart attacks. Living in the West, we all know that wildfires are a fact of life, but the studies show that due to the climate change, our fire seasons are becoming longer and more severe. This makes it imperative that we take action to address the problem before it gets even worse. Here's what the studies have shown. Since 1986, longer and warmer summers have led to a fourfold increase in major wildfires compared to the period of 1970 to 1986. In the western United States, the length of the active fire season has increased by 78 days, and the average burn duration of large fires has increased from 7.5 to 37.1 days. We've seen these longer seasons in Montana where fires and smoky skies can linger well into the fall, leading to cancellations of school football games and other outdoor activities at the start of each school year. Research has also shown that the snowpacks are melting now 1 to 4 weeks earlier than they did 50 years ago, with stream flows also peaking significantly earlier. In short, we have a scenario where temperatures quickly heat up in the summers, drying out our forest early in the season, and making fire a greater likelihood when lightning or human carelessness strikes. And as residents of failing state-of-the-air counties know, the fire doesn't need to even be in Montana in order to pollute our air. Much of the smoke that filled our skies during 2012 came from fires in Idaho. So what can we do? First, we must understand that the impacts of climate change aren't limited to coastal areas subject to rising sea levels and more intense hurricanes. They are happening here in Montana, too, resulting in more intense wildfires and droughts. This is threatening our public health, our outdoor recreation economy, and our agriculture. We must hold decision-makers and polluters accountable. Our elected officials must act, and industry must address causes of climate change, and we as individuals must work to reduce our own carbon footprint. We must strongly support proposed federal limits on carbon emissions from new and existing coal-fired power plants. Existing power plants are the single largest source of carbon emissions, creating 32% of our nation's greenhouse gases. But despite this threat, there are currently no limits on how much carbon plants can emit. Placing limits on how much pollution these plants produce will help slow climate change and help reduce wildfires and other risks associated with warming temperatures. This is a first and hugely important step our state and federal leaders can take in order to protect Montana's public health and quality of life. Thank you for your concern.
Dr. Bob Merchant is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.